Hello, hello, everybody. This is Alexandra Metters of GalacticConnection.com, and we are in the lovely month of December. Don't you guys love December? It's when everybody's actually really, really happy. despite the fact that they might be lacking funding. Anyway, today is December 7th, and I have kind of an impromptu interview again with Kevin Annette of the ITCCS.org, and I would like everyone to hang on because he's got some more information. Again, if you are not familiar with Kevin Annette's work, please review it at ITCCS.org. He is a community minister, a human rights consultant, and the field secretary for the International Tribunal into Crimes of Church and State. That is his big claim to fame, as well as he was also nominated for the, what was that again? The Peace...
Nobel Peace Prize.
I was just like, wow. How did that come about, by the way?
Some professors in America in Aboriginal studies, three of them nominated me in 2013.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
And you know what? You deserve it. I know you're on the front line with a very nasty subject, and a lot of people don't want to face it, but you do handle it with elegance and eloquence. So,
shucks.
Yeah, a lot of us are out here really rooting for you. But anyway, folks, today we have quite a bit to cover. Kevin and I are going to be doing more regular interviews because of the fact that things are really starting to move. And if you noticed in the last interview, the teeth and the power behind common law is really starting to present itself to the world. And today we're going to cover a variety of topics, one being I would like to follow up with Kevin on any of the latest information regarding Burnaby Mountain. We're also going to be talking about the Republic of Kanada. We're going to be talking about the Dutch People's Tribunal. We're going to be talking about the ancient Roman holidays and just a whole bunch of other stuff. So this should be a really meaty interview. If you have any questions, feel free to drop Kevin an email. And Kevin, can you give them your email address again?
Yeah, it's hiddenfromhistory1. That's number one, hiddenfromhistory1@gmail.com.
Okay, cool. As always, you can always access my interviews through the BBS tab at the top of GalacticConnection.com website. And I'm on Station 2. This will go up on Tuesday under the BBS radio tab if you miss it today. And just to remind you, we are a free service to the public. You know, we do all of our interviews for free. We do the website for free. We do all the blogging for free. So if you feel compelled at this holiday season to contribute any kind of donations, even if it's the smallest amount, we would greatly appreciate it. So anyway, at this time, Kevin, I really kind of wanted to start off with your call to action with the Republic of Kanada. I thought that was a good place to start, and it apparently seems as if a lot of people are realizing the strength at which the common law opportunities are coming forth after the Kinder Morgan dispute.
Right. Well, you know, it's almost like dealing with people who are walking around with a blindfold on, and they don't realize their own nature of power till it comes off, and then they go, oh, wow, look at what we can do, look what we've done. That definitely happened in the case of the whole Kinder Morgan dispute. Really, it was the first time in history in Canada that a major environmentally destroying company, in this case a pipeline company, was made to stand off. And the RCMP, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, and the courts stood back as well, when the only thing compelling them to do that was the issuing of the stand-down order. And, well, there was something kind of another aspect of that, which we can talk about, but the stand-down order basically said, you guys are serving a criminally convicted body known as the Crown of England, and you have no authority here. Stand off in this dispute. You're illegally arresting people at the behest of a private corporation. Back off. And they did. Now, that had never happened before, and a lot of people have taken great strength from that. We've had dozens, literally, of emails writing to me, people from Vancouver wanting to join up in the wake of that, because they see the power that we have when we exert it. And one of the other reasons that the judges in question ordered the, when I say the court stood off, they ordered the release of the 110 plus people who had been legally detained by the RCMP. They dropped all the charges of trespass and all that stuff against them. And one of the reasons was is these judges are connected to other judges that have been named as participants in a child trafficking network in Vancouver called the 12 Mile Club. Frankly, they knew that this stuff was going to come out in court. We're almost saying to them, fine, let's go to court. We're going to spill all this stuff on the public record. Go right ahead. They knew that. They stood down. I mean, this is part of this whole bigger drama unfolding.
That's what I said in my blog post, was that it was almost a checkmate situation, wasn't it?
Right. Well, we've got a lot of cards in our deck now, and one of them being the Canadian government itself, the top cabinet minister for Quebec in the Harper government, was seen and identified at a child sacrifice ritual in Rome, February 22nd. And that, that relates to these Roman holiday, sacrificial festivals that we're going to be talking about as well. So, I mean, under that kind of political pressure, naturally, they don't want any of our stuff on the public record. They don't want any. They want to avoid us like a plague now and hope this stuff will blow away, which, of course, it won't.
Yeah, and they're doing a lot of propaganda campaigning as well to do so. We'll talk about that in a few minutes, too. But to stay on track with the Republic of Canada, how has this affected the people stepping forward and signing up their citizenship under the Republic of Canada?
Well, I'll give you some figures to show you. Before this thing happened with Kinder Morgan, so we're, say, 2 to 3 weeks ago, the number of people who had actually signed up and done training and said, committed to do the Republic was somewhere around 120. It's now in excess of about where we actually are close to the 500 mark.
Fantastic.
That, like, tripled in the space of a few weeks. And that doesn't include all the other people who are interested who haven't signed up yet, which is probably running to many hundreds of others. And that's just from word of mouth. Now, once we get on a bigger stage and more people start learning about this, it's going to start growing exponentially. We're finding that because there's an enormous discontent now. It's kind of like you stretch any aspect of the system and all of this stuff starts coming out now because of people's level of awareness.
I really feel that when you and I spoke last time, I just blasted that on the internet.
Yeah.
And it went flying. It went all over Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn. I mean, it went everywhere because it was finally something people could say, wow, it's really making a difference. It actually physically showed that they were backing down.
That's right. We live in a really critical age, which is good. I mean, people are skeptical now more than they were 20, 30 years ago.
Absolutely.
And they need the proof, and we're offering it to them. So, I mean, I don't really think people have any excuse anymore not to get on board, I mean, it's all there for them now.
Well, and there's so many other things supporting your endeavors, as far as the support from the light. There's so much, everything's ripe now, and it's kind of accumulated that mass movement.
Yeah.
So we're really in a really great time. What a phenomenal time to watch this take off. So tell us a little bit about the slated timetable for the proclamation of the Republic of Canada.
January 1st, there's going to be proclamations read in 5 areas of Canada. And it'll be not only proclaiming a severing of the ties with the Crown of England and the corporation known as Canada, the Government of Canada, but it will assert the lawful authority by establishing a constitution which allows common law courts to operate, including a high court, which is kind of the ultimate authority. We're drawing on the precedent from England when, during the English Revolution, where they cut off the head of King Charles in 1649, Parliament, representing the people, established a high court which had supreme authority because it was based on common law. And it said no one, including the king or a pope, is above the law, and the law can judge those people. And it did that, and that's one of the reasons they overthrew the monarchy and established the laws which made it a crime for the monarchy to exist. And for 11 years, that was the regime in England until it was overthrown by a military coup by King Charles's son. They call it the restoration of the monarchy in 1660. But the point is, that was an illegal act. The crown of England since 1660 has been an illegal, fraudulent body because of that. The power rests in the people, we the people, as your founding father said, sovereign men and women. We're simply restoring that, reclaiming that, and nullifying an illegal power known as the Crown of England. So that's going to be what happens on January 1st. And all of that is up at republicofkanata.com. That's the website, K-A-N-A-T-A, republicofkanata.com.
Wow. Wow, I'm speechless. Now, going back to King Charles, you've made reference to him several times. I think it's interesting that the fact that he was beheaded, mm-hmm. you know, represented almost the beheading of the sovereignty and the, you know, the freedom of the people. Now, do you really feel that before that time, before the time of 1649, was there a little bit more flexibility in the law? Was common law really the law of the land at that time?
It was a battle, just like it is now. One of the guys who was the champion of the common law in England, his name was Edward Coke, C-O-K-E, or they pronounced it Cook. But he went toe-to-toe with King Charles and said, no, he was put in the Tower of London for doing it. But he said basically the common law is higher than canon law, admiralty law, the prerogative courts of the king, all of that was subject to the common law. And that was the reason Charles was arrested and tried, because he was conducting a war of aggression against his own people. He was raising funds from Catholic countries and from the Pope to overthrow Parliament and reimpose really what's occurring in many places now, these police state powers under what were called Star Chamber laws, where the king could arrest anyone, try them in secret, kill them in secret. Though all of that power was nullified by Parliament when it overthrew the king, and there was a civil war, as people know, and all that, but they lawfully executed Charles under the same precedent we used to put the Pope and Queen Elizabeth on trial, and that was we gave the accused the chance to respond. They never pleaded. King Charles never gave a plea in his own defense. In other words, he was not contesting the fact that he was a war criminal. A tyrant under the law is somebody who wages a war against his own people.
Mm.
And that's what Queen Elizabeth is doing now, actually. By signing on to the Maastricht Treaty, she subverted the laws of England. By agreeing to bring the Anglican Church back into the Catholic Church, she's violating her coronation oath and should be deposed immediately. You know, all of that stuff, there's a precedent for. And it's called a pro confesso under the law. It means if you don't challenge the charge made against you and bring in your own plea, it's an automatic verdict of guilt.
Mm, okay. Interesting. God, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
You've been studying this historical information for quite some time, huh, Kevin?
Many lifetimes.
You figured out what I was asking, didn't you?
Yes, I get it.
Anyway, I do want you to bring up the fact of the implications behind the proclamation and the reclaiming of the nation not being under the jurisdiction of the crown, especially when you were talking about how all the bills, taxes, statutes, and laws of former corporate entities such as Canada are no longer viable. Can you talk a little bit about how do you see that unfolding? Because some people might say, oh, my God, that's going to create chaos.
Well, quite the opposite. It means people reclaiming it from the present chaos. People get a bill from the IRS in Canada. It's called the Canadian CRA, Canada Revenue Agency. You just send the bills back to CRA saying null and void. You're under the you're serving a criminal body. Instead, people take their money and they put it into the local community. One of the things that local Republic of Canada committees are organizing is these new community institutions to pick up the slack. So, you know, people put money in a local community bank of whatever form they want. They take back the wealth of the nation. They stop paying interest to these banks. They nullify their authority. That they go to the police and they say, you're on board with us now. You need to take an oath of allegiance to the Republic. Start serving us. It's at every level of society. And it's an enormous awakening that's happening. it's already started. And you can't stop something like this once it starts, once people's minds are freed in this way.
I think just the excitement alone of seeing the masses stand in unison and say, I will no longer pay taxes of something that was illegally passed to begin with.
Right.
Is just, you know, that's a game changer right there. You know?
It is, and it applies in America. Even if this wasn't the case about the reclaiming the republic, and there's a movement in America, of course, Reclaim the Republic, which is just simply trying to get rid of the de facto courts and reestablish de jure courts, which are guaranteed under the Constitution, common law jury trial in the Sixth and Seventh Amendments to the Constitution. If anybody tries to deny you a common law jury trial, they are in violation of the Constitution and can and should go to jail. So anyway, even if that wasn't the case in America, that you didn't have that, under international law, a government that is engaged in wars of aggression, like the U.S. is in Afghanistan, you're attacking a non-belligerent nation. They didn't do anything to you, but you're waging war on them. That's an act called, it's a war crime. And you are obligated under the Nuremberg Statute, they're called the Nuremberg Statutes in 1950 under international law. It says you have an obligation not to pay taxes to that war-making nation. And if you do, you're an accomplice to a crime if you pay those taxes. So, I mean, there's lots of foundation legally to stand on to say, no, I mean, we're taking back the money here, folks.
It is so exciting. You know, one of the things I distinctly noticed when Obama came on board as our president was all of the Bush administration years prior to that, every single comment was about war on drugs, war on poverty,
right,
war on this, war on terrorism. Everything was positioned and discussed as a war on. And that gave them the ability under admiralty law, correct, Kevin?
Right.
To be able to pursue this from a warlike standpoint.
That's the operative word, war, because, of course, you have a $1 billion a day economy, that war economy. Three-quarters of your national budget goes into military. It's what's sustaining the bubble, the economic bubble that America's in right now. But, of course, it's going down in this new Cold War with the East. You know, there's those two laws that the Congress just passed this last week, basically mobilizing the U.S. military for a war with Russia. They're moving NATO troops into Belarus, into the Ukraine, into Lithuania. They're surrounding Russia from the west with armored divisions from NATO. And, of course, naturally, they've got to sank everybody now about this evil man, Vladimir Putin. It's all about the new bipolar Cold War between the Eastern Bloc, the BRICS nation, and the West.
Yeah.
And, of course, the Vatican is trying to be the intermediary and play both sides like they always do. That's what the Jesuits do. This Jesuit Pope is doing exactly that right now.
Well, and they make money off of it. They make money off of the bloodshed, no matter who wins or who loses, and they actually prefer it that way.
Yeah, definitely.
So, but the other thing I was going to ask you, getting back to the not paying taxes or bills, there has been some question about those that sign up for the Republic of Kanada. Do they have to reside within the so-called boundaries of Canada?
No, that's the point. What we're dealing with here is not simply an idea, but a reality that boundaries are fictions.
Okay.
That nation states are designed as like religion to divide and set people at each other's throats. You know, it's like when I was adopted into the Anishinaabe or Ojibwe people in central Canada back in 2007, I was given the name Eagle Strong Voice. Anishinaabe, Anishinaabek, means the right people, the right kind of people, the ones who are on the right road. They mean true man and woman. Mm-hmm. And Anishinaabe can be anybody. It's not, you got to be Ojibwe, you got to have a certain skin color. No, it's not that at all. It's a true human being. And that's really the same philosophy behind Ganata, which was where the word Canada comes from. It's a Six Nations word, a Haudenosaunee word from Eastern Canada, meaning our village or our community of equals is really what it means. And that's how the Six Nations were. They sat around the Longhouse council fires as equals. And that's where the notion of democracy came from in America, from the Six Nations Confederacy, as Thomas Jefferson admitted. And so that nation of equals is what we're talking about. It spans the globe. It's just manifesting right now in Canada, the so-called Canada, but that's part of the whole debate we're having now and trying to educate people about that.
So it's really important that everybody understand that you can sign up, or, you know, I don't even know if you call it signing up, right, Kevin? I mean, basically what you're doing is you're taking this oath that you will no longer support the allegiance to the Queen,
yes,
the Crown, the Corporation of Canada. And so this is something that everybody across the planet should do, especially because of the precedence that is involved, the message that is going to be sent, and the energetic union and unison experience that will be had because of this.
Yes, exactly. And don't forget, when we're talking the Crown of England, we're talking about the corporate entity behind it, which has a spiritual dimension, but in this three dimensions, it expresses the Church of Rome, the first corporation on the planet that gave rise to the Crown of England, the Church of England. That is the entity we're talking about, the corporate body that we're disestablishing as well.
And there's not a country out there, well, there might be two countries maybe left, that does not have British tentacles wrapped around all of their commerce, you know, their corporations, etc. So this affects everybody on the planet. So again, my whole point and Kevin's whole point is, please go back up and check on republicofkanata.com. That's with a K. So it's K-A-N-A-T-A. And go up there and check it out, because it really is where we want to take the entire world. It's a great first step. And again, I thank all of the people. How many people are involved in putting this whole thing together at this stage?
In the boundaries of, quote, Canada, there's sworn close to 500, probably tenfold beyond that of adherents, supporters, people looking at the stuff, helping, for example, in the common law court movement, stuff like that.
That's fantastic. And, you know, the other thing I was just talking to someone the other day is, it is so difficult to get people together on the same page. This is a very good place for us to start. I don't really care what our passions are. I mean, one person might really want to be working on eco villages. Another person might want to be working on free energy. This is a very core foundation that I really feel we should all jump in and support. The other thing that I wanted you to comment on, Kevin, was the part about reclaiming the land, you know, wiping clean the corruption, proclaiming peace and liberty. Tell me a little bit about, let's say that, you know, this finally occurs. I know that they're convening from January 1st to the 4th, and then they come to a decision on the proclamation and the Constitution, et cetera. The actual reclaiming of the nation, which supposedly is happening on the 15th, how do you see that unfolding?
Well, it comes down to a simple question of land reclamation and people taking back what is given by Creator to all of us, and that's the land and its wealth. And we are, like indigenous people always tell us, and like our own ancestors in Europe used to teach us before they were wiped out, almost, is that the earth is given to no one. It's given to all of us to care for creation and for one and for all its creatures. And anything that violates that is a violation against the laws of God and nature and has no authority. So whether that's a corporation destroying the environment, whether it's the government allowing it, or the police arresting people protesting it, it's all against our common law rights, so God-given right. So what the January 15th reclamation is going to begin, it won't just accomplish it, it's a long process, is people will simply be reclaiming the land. Mm-hmm. They will be going on. We have projects started where actual land that's already being held in common, where these new projects are going to begin. How, you know, concrete examples of how people can live together and share the land in a viable and you know, protective manner. And so there are going to be those land projects starting. We're going to be going into public buildings and reclaiming them. There are going to be all of that starting. You know, we found, like, the example of when we were occupying Catholic churches and the response to that vote. One act has a great ripple effect beyond anything we can ever see because it carries great moral weight with it. Yeah. We occupied one cathedral in Vancouver, and within a couple of weeks, the government was starting to talk about issuing apologies for the residential school genocide. We struck at the right moments, like Sun Tzu says in The Art of War, right? You find the convergence of the right moment, and it doesn't matter how big you are, it's just the fact of acting, whether even if you're one person, that sends out that ripple effect like a tsunami. So we have a lot of those happening, and we're going to see results. But, of course, it won't be acknowledged if your eyes are focused on the corporate media or the so-called realities in the, you know, the bubble world most people live in. You won't see it. You've got to get out of that. And that's the whole spiritual, personal component, how we all need to free our and reclaim our own minds first. Otherwise, we won't see any of this stuff.
You know, I was going to make a couple of comments. First of all, that when you were talking about how it creates a ripple effect, if someone does something that's especially in the name of justice, freedom, love, divinity, you know, these things will carry a ripple effect that increases in its magnificence. It's referred to thaumaturgy, so that if you go to a park and you see a piece of trash and you choose at that second to pick up that piece of trash, there's an energetic pathway that's created by that choice that you made, and others, without even consciously knowing, they will follow suit.
Yeah.
Okay? So the same applies with this. The other thing I was going to say, Kevin, that's just absolutely fascinating to me, because I didn't even know, you know, until yesterday afternoon you and I were going to have this interview today, is I received several messages when I was in Africa that I was to make a very specific essence right around the holidays. And what came through was, guess what it's called? The Renaissance.
Huh.
And it's all based on, it's absolutely beautiful, but it's all based on helping each of us recondition the enslavement thought process that each of us has, you, me included, even though
right.
We're enlightened, we're still in this for so long that we can't help it almost, you know. And it's all about rebirthing, rejuvenating, vitalizing our human spirit, taking the courage to step forth and take back our land, our freedom, our sovereignty, and our divinity. And
exactly.
So I'm like, wow, here I am interviewing you about the same thing today. So, you know, spirit's always amazing.
It is.
Well, do you have any other final comments that you wanted to make about the Republic of Kanata?
No, I just urge everyone, you know, stay posted, republicofkanata.com. And please write to me, too, and I'll get you on our mailing list, and you can get active wherever you are. We actually have a lot of people who have written from the States wanting to help out, saying, do you have something like that down here? You know, I plug them in. We've got, again, hundreds of folks in America working on the common law court and to reclaim the republic. So, again, please, yeah, contact us, and it's all going to be updated regularly, all that news.
Okay, cool. Now, another thing that I've already received several emails on is this big, big propaganda campaign that was put forth on, I believe it was the 2nd of December, supposedly Pope Francis and many other leaders, and they claimed that they were of Jewish, Muslim, and Hindu faiths, gathered together on the Vatican to claim that they were calling an end to slavery by 2020. And it just reeked of diversion tactics. And a lot of people want to hear what your take is on this.
Okay, well, don't forget, when people do like things like that, they're saying the opposite. They are, you know, people say, well, the nature of the darkness is it speaks in opposite language. So, you know, in the Bible, Jesus said he is the father of lies. This other spirit says one thing. He means the exact diametric opposite. They're really talking about how to enslave the human race. And another example of that is, you know, remember when that sacrifice happened of that young boy on February 22nd in Rome at the San Lorenzo Church, where this government cabinet minister from Canada was present. The next week, Interpol holds a conference a block away about the need to stop human trafficking. It's like they have to put in their own spin right away to distract the fact that, yeah, we know who you are now, and they put in their opposite. So really, you know, in the big scheme of things, it's their way. It isn't simply distraction. It's to create an opposite image. It's to think, oh, good, now the Pope wants to end slavery, when in fact, when you look at the interests involved, the financial and corporate interests behind the Vatican, they're deeply involved in human trafficking and human slavery. Best example of that is 'Ndrangheta, the mafia network in Europe that runs all the drug and human trafficking there and in large parts of the world, totally tied into the Vatican, and the Catholic orphanages and the places they get children from. So really what it is, it's kind of a way of saying, well, this is what the agenda is, people. You can't really do anything about it. We're in charge now. Just step back. And I think that's part of definitely a big part of what was going on. At another level, it's also their need to cover themselves. That's why Bergoglio was in there in the first place, to put that window dressing on the whole situation.
Well, you know, and I was going to ask you about that, because he hasn't really been seen a lot. And all of a sudden he made a public presence at this so-called, the ceremony is what they call it, which I just had to laugh. What did you feel about the people that actually participated? It says here the head of the Anglican Communion, the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby.
Oh, he's a convicted criminal.
The Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew, and Egypt's Al-Azhar Mosque, Ahmad Muhammad Ahmad El Tayeb.
Right. Well, so-called ecumenicalism means united all religions under one corporate head, Rome. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, reestablishment of the power, the imperial power of Rome again. But no, this is what I'm talking about. Justin Welby, seen by eyewitnesses at Ninth Circle sacrificial rituals, named in the indictment, convicted by the common law court, that verdict came out a few months ago. This convicted felon shows up in Rome posing as, you know, the friend of people enslaved. It's like, this is what I'm talking about.
It is laughable, Kevin. It says here, here's a quote, "Modern slavery fails to respect the fundamental conviction that all people are equal and have the same freedom and dignity," unquote.
Well, that's like the Anglican Church saying we're against war, but they were exposed 2 years ago as one of their biggest corporate investments was in landmine companies.
God.
You know, the Anglican Church, the Catholic Church, they're heavily involved in the arm industry. Some of the biggest investments are the biggest small arms manufacturer in the world, Beretta, is 100% owned by the Vatican. So if these guys are against war and slavery, how about disinvesting their own funds? They're not going to. They just keep doing these public relation gimmicks. And, you know, again, it's part of another example of what's really going on in Rome. The other day, the Bergoglio, you know, so-called, he's not the Pope, but anyway, quote, Pope Francis, fired the head of the Swiss Guards, this German guy who is head of his private security unit. He's worried about getting whacked by the German faction around Ratzinger. So he didn't want any more Germans. He replaced all the Germans who are on the Papal Reform Commissions and the Vatican Bank and all that. He knows there are a lot of resignations. The guy's worried about whether he's going to be in there very long because of the faction fight going on. Ratzinger still holds the power in Rome. Bergoglio is the figurehead, the puppet doing the dance to distract people. That's what Jesuits do historically.
Right.
Deceive and dissimulate. But no, there's all this other stuff going behind the smoke screen.
Well, you know, there were two things I found to be very much laughable, is what I was saying before. One of them was that they had a call to end slavery by 2020. Well, why do we have to wait 6 years? You know, that's number one. And number two, why are we as a people on this planet looking to them to do this for us? This is exactly what Kevin and I are talking about, where we step in back into our own authority. We don't need institutions to tell us what is right and what is wrong.
Exactly.
You know, it's very important that we see through these articles that come out saying, oh, they want to play nice and...
Well, especially institutions with blood on their hands. I mean, you know, they're not the ones to look to for moral leadership.
Yeah, and the fact that you're proving that it just happened again.
Yeah.
You know, that this child sacrifice and ritual sacrificing is still going on all the time. What is your take on India's, I hope I can pronounce her name right, Mata Amritananda Mayi? Are you familiar with her? She's known as Amma.
No, I'm sorry, I don't.
Okay. Because someone made a comment to me that if she's involved, then they were suspicious. Supposedly she's of the Hindu religion, and she's working in cooperation with Pope Francis.
Oh, yeah.
To end the human trafficking. That's the part that just blew my mind. They actually say human trafficking.
Well, they have to. They're the biggest practitioners of human trafficking with 'Ndrangheta, the Vatican and 'Ndrangheta. They run a lot of the human trafficking in the world. Naturally, they've got to do the spin to say, no, we're against it. I mean, any criminal does that. That's why there's a official government commission into child trafficking in England right now, run by the British government, just as 20 members of parliament and cabinet ministers are being exposed as child rapists. You know, you get the criminal to do the inquiry into itself, and you know what the outcome's going to be, right?
You know, it really feels to me like they're setting themselves up for a big fall by doing this final big campaign.
It's desperate. For sure, it's an act of desperation.
It really feels like it.
Yeah.
Now, you just completed a really good interview regarding the Roman festivals and holidays, and I kind of wanted us to dive into that because that is affiliated with the Dutch People's Tribunal, which we'll talk about in a minute as well. But you were mentioning how because of this Burnaby Mountain decree that you basically ordered all of the peace officers to stand down, as well as the Supreme Court, and were successful in doing so. Tell me a little bit about how has that affected any of the information that's now coming into your office? Are people even becoming a little bit more willing to step forward because of that?
Absolutely, including very important insiders. I got a communication, and I won't say what country, but he's a 26-year veteran in a crime unit. He's a detective with the police force.
Excellent.
And he said he's had many, many takedowns of criminals that use occult and child sacrifice as part of their criminal operations. He wants to share all of the details with me. This is going to go into the evidence in the Dutch People's Tribunal, which is looking into the connection between child sacrifice and trafficking and the transhumanist agenda of robotizing the human race. We're making that connection at the Dutch People's Tribunal, which is opening early in April in Brussels. But it shows you that these kinds of insiders are coming forward because of the success we're having. I get calls like that from Maldives, you know, government sources all the time. I mean, fairly regularly. Even you know, retired people would come forward with little bits of information. That's definitely increasing now.
That's fantastic. Do you feel that part of this is, you know, they're less afraid to step forward, or do you feel it's because they have a bigger weight on their conscience?
I think conscience is one part of it, but unfortunately it doesn't seem the dominant part. People know it's safer now, and they know that when the boat goes down, they're going to have to get off it. It's the rats leaving the ship, and the thing about hierarchies like this is, since they're criminal in nature, as soon as it starts toppling at the top, everybody starts deserting it because they worried about their own skin. They had a mutual pact not to talk, but when that pact starts falling apart, the first thing they think is, well, if they're going to talk, I'm going to be named. I better get my name clear and get on the winning side. And you see that happening more.
That's fantastic. This is just so, you know, we've talked for quite some time, Kevin, over the year or two, and it's just really feeling like things are taking off for you and all of us, you know. Now, tell us a little bit more about, I know you've got some really cutting-edge information about the Dutch People's Tribunal reopening the Mark Dutroux case. And right. So what is going on with that at this stage?
Okay, well, Mark Dutroux was a serial child killer. He was finally brought to trial in a very staged, controlled courtroom in Holland. Mark Dutroux, there were two transcripts. There was the official transcript where he named members of the Dutch and Belgian royal families as having been present at child killing rituals, the kinds of thing that Toast Nienhaus and Anne-Marie van Billenburg confirmed. You know, people can see those at itccs.org. Basically, Dutroux, the transcript where he named this thing, that was taken out of the court record. Laurel Louis, who's a member of the Dutch, or was a member of the Belgian Parliament, got up and demanded that the Dutroux case be reopened because he named members of the government involved in that same child-killing cult. He was basically thrown out of Parliament. They ignored his parliamentary immunity. He's now facing jail terms. He's part of our Dutch People's Tribunal, and it involves occult rituals, including the ones we mentioned coming out of Rome. So that's really the significance of this. This whole thing is being exposed.
That's amazing. Now, I felt that one of the most important things that you touched upon is transhumanism. And I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about how do you see the role that you play in uncovering all of this child sacrifice? How do you see that having a correlation with transhumanism?
Well, part of the whole thing in transhumanism is to you've got to obliterate the normal critical consciousness of the human race before you can manipulate them. And best way to do that is to traumatize them at a young age. A lot of these child abuse things that we uncovered, like in the Indian boarding schools, one tip of a much bigger iceberg having to do with a whole government agenda of, how to exterminate the human race by controlling kids at a young age. Turning them into robots so they, you know, one practical use of it is sleeper assassins, which the people out there's hundreds of them, all thousands all over the world, just ready to be triggered. That was the purpose of raping children at a young age, to create multiple personality types that can then be controlled. I mean, that was one example of the correlation between child abuse, child trafficking, and this, you know, transhumanist agenda. But it goes to a bigger scale involving HARP technology, directed energy weapons. People who have been victims of these things are all going to be part of this tribunal. And there's going to be two aspects of it. This first part of the court case will be led by a prosecution team that's led by me, where we're going to be looking into the child trafficking end of it. And then others in Belgium and Holland will be doing the second part of the prosecution, which is looking specifically at the transhumanist technology. And then we bring it all together to show the big picture to people how this is an attack aimed at our minds and our children right now, and everybody's affected and everybody's targeted.
God, Kevin, this is fantastic that you're opening this up and, you know, correlating it with the child sacrifice. I mean, because it all really is involving the same thing. They all involve mind control. They all involve shock and trauma. And they all also involve nanotechnology.
Right.
Now, I get quite a few emails from people that are either targeted or they're suffering from HARP. And as you know, because of the implant removal process, we hear a lot of stories of what is being done to people because they're perceived as a threat. So you did mention that one of the things I thought that was going to be cool was Louis was actually going to review how they use these manipulations and techniques of targeting to dissuade people from paying attention to what's really going on, right? I mean, this is just a kind of a normal way in which to avoid the dirty laundry.
Right.
Right.
Well, you know, it's really keeping people in a state of fear. You know, there's a principle in philosophy called Occam's razor, and it's basically that the simplest explanation is always most likely to be the true one. So, you know, when you hear about the governments having the technology to control minds en masse, the first question is, how come they're not doing it more effectively? Like, when there's a protest, how come they don't hit a button and all the protesters get mind blanked and go home?
Mm-hmm.
They don't do it because they don't have that level of technology, but they need to create the impression that they do. So that is a far more effective way to control people, by keeping everyone in such a state of fear that they won't even go out on a protest anymore or look at this stuff in case their minds get zapped. I mean, that's what they need to create, that image in us. And so, yeah, they do selective things, like they will target an individual and make an example of them. That's why they haven't gone after me, because after a while, if you do that, if a person's got enough exposure, it blows back on them.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got to do it selectively. But they do it definitely according to a cult ritual. For example, you know, this thing that happened in Rome, February 22nd. It's directly between these two Roman festivals, Feralia on the 21st and Terminalia on the 23rd. And that was for a reason. It's because in the Feast of Feralia, it was like a thing the Romans did to honor their ancestors. They would do sacrifices, originally of animals and eventually of children.
Oh,
and symbolically, they would take a fish, the head of a fish, and they would impale it with a bronze needle. And then roast it with fire. Well, guess what they do in child sacrifice rituals quite often? The impaling of bolts and needles through the heads of newborn babies and that is part of the ritual. That's one of the testimonies we uncovered at the Indian boarding schools, where we had eyewitnesses who saw this happen. Famous serial killer in Canada, Clifford Olson, they used to do that to his victims. Impale them through the head with these things. This is coming from the same source. It's coming out of Rome. It's what they did on February 22nd, 2014, to a young boy in the Jesuit church, you know, right a block from the Vatican. I mean, they know it has power. And, you know, they talk about soul snatching. They talk about all of these means that energetically they're able to take people's essence. I think there's great weight behind that. They know it even if other people deny it.
Actually, Kevin, there's quite a bit of information in the spiritual community about that.
Yeah.
And one of the concerns I've had is some of the larger, massive meditations, you know, where they do worldwide meditations, depending on the intent and who's involved, you know, that amazing amount of energy that everyone is placing into that meditation can be harvested.
Right.
You know, and it's similar with people's souls. It's I've actually read that, you know, because these beings that are running the planet are not human, that's what they live off of, is the essence of people's souls. They literally will try to extract that from, you know, these victims. It's disgusting.
I think that's present. It also requires, here's the thing though, we're beings of choice, ultimately. And the victim has to willingly give some part of themselves initially to that for it to work. Now, that's why they target people like drug addicts, child rape victims, people who are already being so hammered that they don't have that capacity, that will, their own spiritual autonomy anymore, and are able to surrender like that. But we always have the choice to say no, and that's the power of what we're doing. You create enough of a critical mass of people saying no, and they have no power anymore. It collapses, and that's what we're seeing. That's why they're doing these public relations gimmicks in Rome, because they know their inner spiritual power has collapsed. First time I was in Rome doing that exorcism rite in October 2009, I expected to feel really overwhelmed inside being there by the enormity of this depravity and violence in this place in Rome. You know what? I felt nothing. I was standing there. It was like standing in front of a big vacuum, a big hole. There was nothing there.
Whoa.
It's like a big illusion.
Whoa. That's crazy.
Yep.
Wow. Well, I did send over to Kevin something that I found called Ancient Roman Holidays and Festivals, and I was just curious. There are a couple things in here that I thought were applicable to all of these child sacrifices, but most importantly, because we're talking about this season, they were talking about Agonalia, and this goes up to January 9th. It's the festival to Janus, the god of the gates and doorways. Now, did you see this part? It says, Janus was very important in Rome because the weakest point in any building or municipality is its doorway. Anything from human enemies to evil spirits could enter via this route. So strong was this feeling that Romans always carried their corpses out of the building feet first so that the departed spirits would be less likely to find their way back in.
Yep.
Now, you know, this is a Roman holiday. and why people don't see that these are still rooted belief systems that, you know, that the entire institution is based on.
Well, in the Gregorian calendar, why did they make January the first month? Because it's from Januarius, the first month, or Janus. It's the doorway to the year, right?
Yes.
As long as we operate under the calendar, as part of the control you're talking about, they impose their grid on us, their mental, spiritual grid, energetic grid.
Correct.
It's what the cross is. Okay, the cross is not Christian, it's Roman. The Christian symbol, of course, the open-ended infinity symbol, or what they call the fish, that was the people around Jesus had that. It was replaced by a cross, which is really a grid. Draw a box around a cross and you get a grid. That was the Roman army camp. That's why we have grid systems in modern cities. The Roman army camp would establish a grid. It would set itself up when it conquered a territory, set up a grid, and it would impose its energy on that territory. It would claim that territory for the gods of Rome. That's what the cross is. It's imposing the energy of Rome on the world. It has nothing to do with Christ.
Thank you for bringing that up, because the other thing that's such an aha for me is if you take a cross and you divide it into separate boxes, okay? You know how the cross is elongated in the vertical part of it, okay? If you actually fold that up, it will fold up into a perfect box, which is directly affiliated with Saturn, which is directly affiliated with the cult sacrifice of Saturnalia.
Right. We're being all put in the box to be sacrificed. That's what Christendom does. That's what Rome does. And it keeps people tied in emotionally by saying, oh, this is Christ. This is that cultic figure we invented that really has nothing to do with the person of Jesus or his teaching.
Exactly. And, you know, don't forget, folks, the first day of the year is in March, or April 1st, right? March 23rd.
Yeah, different traditions. Like my people in Ireland said, Samhain, October 31st was the first year.
Interesting.
Each part of the earth has its own power grid, its own gods, its own energy, its own language. That's, you know, it's the opposite of e pluribus unum, which means it's the corporate idea for many. One, everything goes into one corporation. It's the other way around. From one is many. There's ultimate diversity and variety.
Yes.
In creation and in all of us.
Well, I want to thank you for bringing up the Roman festival holidays, because I am going to publish the link for this document I sent over to you. It's a real eye-opener. The reason I say that, people are going to really start seeing some comparisons between who they call the gods, such as Mercury and Jupiter and Mars, and the same video that was put out by the Yellow Rose for Texas, where she talks about each of the planets and how they represent beings, etheric, energetic beings, that it's just like what you were talking about, the grid, you know, where it's exuding certain frequencies, certain energetic frequencies onto the people.
Well, that's really, it's all about that ultimately, yep.
Yeah, so anyway, and the one I also really wanted to point out to you was Liberalia, March 17th, celebration of freedom from evil, burdens, care, and folly, a continuation of the celebration for Mars during this month. Now get this, this was the day for boys who still wore the toga to assume that they, you know, manly gown and declare their adulthood, pending the permission of the pater familias, of course, meaning their family, usually on the occurrence falling nearest their 16th birthday.
Hmm.
So, you know, even that is referring to their, you know, coming of age, becoming
right.
Man, and probably getting into that same sacrifice.
Well, don't forget, Roman law, which is admiralty law, canon law, all the oppressive laws in the world come out of Roman law. It's really property law. It says there's the owned and the owners. And most of us are owned under their system, and whether it's spiritually, literally, whatever. And then along came this idea in common law, which came out of tribal traditions, really Saxon law in Northern Europe. And it said, no, there's no such thing as ownership. We are equal in the eyes of God. We are inherently free, and nobody can own us. this is two totally clashing systems, and that's why common law is really about liberating people from all of this.
I agree. And, you know, just one more comment about the festivals. Now, are you in agreement, Kevin, that they're basically still operating under these holidays, but they've probably renamed them?
Yeah, oh, very much. That example in Rome, the sacrifice on the 22nd of February, I mean, is an example of it. It's kind of like the Catholic Church is, well, I don't want to call it that. I've got to stop using these terms. Catholic means universal. It's part of the mind control, the brainwashing. I refer to it as either papism or Romanism, but that religious cult coming out of Rome, you know, it's always based on a simple idea that they know what's best for us, but they have to update that all the time. So they modernize the language all the time. They need a Bergoglio in every now and then to make everybody think, oh, look, the Church of Rome, they're really with it. I mean, you know, they're updating themselves. We can trust them again because they know that bred into us is this infantile need to believe in the power of our parents. And they're all parental figures, popes, presidents, everything.
Fair.
And we're brainwashed to think, well, they've got to treat us nice. As long as they're treating us nice, the system's fine. That's how a slave or a child thinks.
That's such a good point. Well, also the fact that within each of us is the divine spark, and the divine spark is of pure light and love.
Right.
So we just want to love and be loved.
And it doesn't require approval. It doesn't require anyone above us. It doesn't require, you know, the divine condescension. You get that all the time. God kind of stoops down to help his little minions down here. No, that's not the natural order, but that's what's being wired into us. It's all about hierarchy, you know, in the way we're being taught to think.
That's such a great deal. But again, folks, I'm telling you, go through this. I will put a link with Kevin's in my interview. It's going to blow your mind because basically, Kevin, everything about these holidays has to do with decapitating animals, spilling the blood, people sacrificing, asking for forgiveness of past lies, and the success, now get this, the success of new deceits.
Right.
Okay, what divine, pure institution is going to ask you to have success of new deceits?
Well, there's a really good book called The Chalice and the Blade. I don't know if you've ever read it.
You mentioned that to me before. I've got to pick that up.
Breanne Eisler, she's an anthropologist, writing in the 70s. She understood very well that in the what they call the old European cultures, which were goddess-based, which were understood divine as being the feminine power of creation, it was overthrown in a period of about 1,500 years by what she calls the Kurgans out of Central Asia, which was the patriarchal god of thunder in the mountain, Jehovah. It's the patriarchal god which gave rise to Romanism,
yeah.
Islam, Judaism, all of them come out of that seeing God as a sword, as a conqueror. That's what domine means. It means God, and it also means conquest in Latin. You know, it's wired right in. Violence means God's will and power over others. And creation, of course, is the mother, the great sacred circle of life and recreation.
Yeah.
And that's really at the heart of what we're recovering in all of us, as you talk about.
Very true. Because we're moving more and more of going within and realizing that our universe is within us. It's not outside of us.
Mm-hmm.
In many ways.
So. Once you know that, then all the institutions start falling, and that's what we want.
So all of us that are listening to this interview, we are the ones that are on task at the moment. It is
right.
Up to us to take the torch and lead the rest of humanity down the path to sovereignty and freedom. We can do this. We have enough information now and enough of an acceleration and energies that are supporting us to really get this to happen sooner than we expected, I really believe. So 2015 looks like a fantastic year. What a great way to kick it off with the Republic of Kanata. That's very exciting. Do you have any other news or information that you'd like to share with us today?
I think there will be stuff coming up over the next week or two, even more significant. So I'm waiting on that from Europe and other places.
Okay.
We can definitely talk again. But for now, itccs.org, republicofkanata.com, And carry it on, folks.
Yeah. Keep on doing what you're doing. Everybody, you guys are awesome. You're an awesome audience. I love you with all my heart and soul. And Kevin and I both thank you for all you are and all you do. You guys have a wonderful rest of the week, and keep the light shining. Take care. Love you. And as always, you can always check out the blog for galacticconnection.com. And we are running 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Talk to you guys soon. Love you. Bye.